Harris and Trump hold Hispanic town halls, but is either campaign really engaging those voters? And who's confronting the toxic disinformation Hispanic voters face? Welcome to the South Florida Roundup. I'm your host, Tim Padgett. In the next hour, we're going to focus on the Hispanic vote, one of the most important in this region and this state. We'll review Vice President Kamala Harris's televised Hispanic town hall in Las Vegas last night and preview the one former President Donald Trump will hold next week here in Miami. A panel of Hispanic journalists and experts will help us examine why election disinformation is so rampant in Spanish language media and what, if anything, could be done about it. All that coming up right after the news. I'm Tim Padgett. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Bienvenidos, bienveni, bienvindo. Last night, Vice President Kamala Harris, the Democratic presidential candidate, held a town hall for undecided Hispanic voters in Las Vegas, televised on the Univision network. Former President Donald Trump, the Republican candidate, had planned to hold his own Hispanic town hall earlier this week here in Miami, also on Univision, but because of Hurricane Milton, he had to postpone it until next Wednesday. The fact that both Harris and Trump are holding these town halls, which are a nod to Hispanic Heritage Month, which ends next week, it seems to suggest Hispanic voters remain a crucial swing block in this election. But are they really? The fact that Florida is no longer a presidential swing state, for example, has made the Cuban vote less influential these days. Then again, that reality has made the Mexican vote, the largest Hispanic cohort, all the more important in genuine battleground states like Nevada and Arizona and even North Carolina. We're devoting this week's show to the Hispanic vote. This is, after all, the South Florida Roundup. And we want to know, ¿qué piensan ustedes? What do you think? Do Florida's Hispanic voters still matter? Call us at 800-743-WLRN. 800-743-9576. Joining me now to consider that question and many more is our go-to expert on the Hispanic vote, Florida International University political science professor Eduardo Gamarra, who also heads FIU's Latino Public Opinion Forum. Eduardo, thanks as always for coming on.
My pleasure, Tim. Thanks for having me.
I want to start with Vice President Harris's Hispanic town hall last night. She's the one all the pundits said needed to get more serious about courting the Hispanic vote. She does have a sizable lead over Trump among Hispanics, 54% to 40% in a recent NBC poll. But that's still well below the share President Biden won 4 years ago. And in a tight race like this, that could matter quite a bit. Do you think, Eduardo, that she made up ground in the hour she spent with undecided Hispanic voters last night? Or, as you mentioned earlier, do you think all the negative comments on Univision's YouTube page are more indicative of how things went?
Well, Tim, it's always hard to measure the impact of events like the one held last night. And my sense is that it probably didn't make any difference.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I was really quite surprised in watching the YouTube version, let us say, about all the comments there. I didn't find a single positive comment. And that tells you one of two things. That Republicans came out in droves in the comments, right?
Yeah,
and
uh-huh.
But it also tells you that there's no team on the Democratic side to respond.
Yeah.
I don't think it makes any difference. It won't make any difference in the outcome.
Yeah.
It won't lose ground, but I don't think they gained ground either from the discussion.
Yeah, that's interesting what you point out about that YouTube page. Is that indicative, perhaps, of perhaps a troubling fact that the Democratic Party is still taking the Latino vote, the Hispanic vote, for granted? I mean, the fact that they didn't perhaps have a team out there, you know, matching the Republicans comment for comment on that YouTube page.
Well, Tim, as you know, I've always said that Democrats one always take Hispanics for granted, and that's a huge mistake.
Yeah.
Secondly, they always start late, right? And in this case, you shouldn't be courting Hispanics 2 weeks out from the elections.
Yeah.
Well, this should have been an ongoing effort from the very beginning, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, what they're trying to do is make up ground on, maybe it's kind of the obligatory meeting because it's Hispanic Heritage Month and
Yeah.
so on.
Yeah.
I think that's probably my main criticism of the Democrats. They still take us for granted, and they start way too late.
Now, it's no surprise that Harris held her Hispanic town hall out west, where she does much better with Hispanic blocs like Mexican Americans than she and the Democrats do with blocs like Cuban Americans here in Florida. But she's been having a hard time sealing the deal with Hispanics, even out in states like Nevada and Arizona. The last time you and I spoke about this on the show, I believe it was last December, you emphasized economic anxieties among Hispanics, especially the fact, for example, that Hispanics are more likely to rent housing, and so inflation was really pounding them. But what has been pushing Mexicans and other non-Florida Hispanic voters away from Harris and the Democrats in this election cycle, do you think?
Well, remember, we're talking about Hispanics who vote. In other words, Hispanics who are American citizens. And there's a really interesting set of studies that looks at Hispanics generationally. As you get to the second and third generation, they begin to vote very much like the rest of the electorate, and so they're largely driven by economic considerations,
Right.
and particularly the price of food, the price of housing. Those things are really impacting Latinos. And so, for example, last night there was a very interesting exchange, and one which I think the vice president sort of missed an opportunity with. It was an exchange about prices. This woman was telling her how, she sees all the figures about how great our economy is doing, but for her, it's still the price that she has to pay when she goes and buys gas or when she goes to the supermarket. And instead of using that as a moment, I think to really tell the story about how this economy has transformed. It was she tried to develop empathy with her, and I don't think it worked very well. But this is the key issue for Hispanics who are U.S. citizens, and therefore they're facing an enormous problem every time they have to go shopping, especially if they're on fixed income.
But immigration, in a sort of counterintuitive way, is also become a big issue for many Hispanics. In her town hall last night, which issues like immigration do you think Harris engaged these undecided Hispanic voters on effectively and not so effectively? As I said, immigration, but also health care, were not surprisingly prominent on their agenda. How did she do?
Well, she was asked by a Mexican fellow about immigration, a Mexican fellow from Arizona,
Right.
and it was interesting because the question sort of reflected this idea that we've been getting in survey after survey. Right? We asked, for example, Tim, what is the principal national security threat? Again, we're asking Hispanics who are U.S. citizens, and they're telling us that the number one issue is the border, that it's illegal immigration. Right, which was sort of the sense that I got from the question that gentleman asked last night. And so she's been trying to say to Hispanics, right, the very same message that she's saying to everybody else: we have to control the border. We have to have and so she goes back to the discussion about what they've been doing in a bipartisan way. I don't think she's been very effective in telling us that for 3.5 years, they had a lot of trouble getting any kind of traction on anything that they were proposing with immigration reform. And right now, I think it is a big issue for Hispanics that who have been inundated, bombarded, even here, in Florida, as the visits by Donald Trump telling predominantly Hispanic crowds that he's going to
Right.
deport 21 million people, and to applauses,
But
right?
she tried to turn the table on Trump in that sense. I remember when she was speaking with that Mexican American woman who had the very sad story about her mother dying before she could become a U.S. citizen. And as you pointed out, Harris tried to create empathy with this woman, but also use it as an opportunity to tell the woman, look, our immigration system is broken, but it's Trump's fault. He's the one who derailed that immigration reform, bipartisan immigration reform bill that was in Congress last year. Is that having any traction, that kind of message to Hispanics on her part, do you think?
Well, we haven't measured that specific, you know, question, but we have measured others, and we're getting, for example, you know, support for mass deportation. Tim, we got 32% of our sample agrees with that vision.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
These are, you know, it's striking.
Coming from the Hispanic community, yeah.
Right. They also, you know, that same amount, about 32 to 34%, agrees with doing away with DACA. Right.
Yeah.
And so that is the Trump base, right?
Yeah.
Now, I do want to say something about polling, and especially this close to elections. You'll see the samples are very small, Tim, mm-hmm. and some of the generalizations that our pollster colleagues are making about with small samples, we need to be really cautious about.
Okay.
You can't make a generalization when you take 100, you know, 123 people and sample them nationally.
Well, duly noted, but at the same time, while we know Trump is especially popular with Florida Hispanics because of the communism and socialism issue, for example, is he doing any better with those non-Florida Hispanics, like Mexicans, than he did in 2016 or 2020, in spite of, or perhaps even because of, you know, as you've just hinted, his promise to deport every undocumented migrant once he takes office again?
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting because again, he has gained some traction with Hispanics, but certainly not as much as people assume, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I was being cautious about the poll results. We think that he's had about a 3% boost since 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, trying to explain that 3% boost is what I'm sort of devoting my time to, and what we're finding again is. Is issues that are related to the economy primarily.
Right.
But I do think that there's something that, you know, maybe we're missing. I know a lot of surveys have been looking at this, and it is that there is an enormous gender gap among Hispanics. Enormous.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? Which when we ask, for example, how important is abortion in your decision to vote, there's almost a 20% gap in gender.
Does okay. that not that, reflect, though, the general electorate in the country, though?
It is, exactly.
Yeah.
And so when you look at that, you know, I think I'm beginning to talk about a hidden Kamala vote, right?
In the Hispanic bloc.
In the Hispanic bloc. In other
right.
words, people that are, you know, they might identify on some things with Trump, but they're not going to tell you because they think they're going to be shamed or what have you.
Right.
And I think that's transcending into the general electorate as well, by the way.
No, that is interesting. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. I'm talking with FIU's Eduardo Gamarra about the Hispanic vote and what difference it will make in next month's election. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Now, Eduardo, Trump, as I mentioned, will be holding his Hispanic town hall here in Miami, a much friendlier Hispanic venue for him. What are you expecting from him next week, and what does he need to do or say to Hispanics, especially those non-Florida Hispanics, to pull enough of that vote away from Harris to make a difference in those battleground states like Nevada and North Carolina?
Yeah. You know, Tim, observing Donald Trump for years now, Donald Trump is Donald Trump,
and
it doesn't really matter how well you coach him, what you tell him. You know, his advisors all always say the same, right? They prepare him for debates. They prepare him for, but Trump does whatever he wants to do in these, and he will do the same during the town hall next week. He'll come in with maybe the preparation of others, but he will essentially go back to his same to the very same things that he's been talking about, and he will talk about immigration, and he'll say some of the very same things that we've been analyzing. And he'll likely have a friendly crowd, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Univision will do as good a job on Wednesday as they did this time to find difficult questions for him.
Right. And speaking of that friendly crowd, I also wanted to discuss with you where Florida and especially South Florida Hispanic voters find themselves now that this state is red. Since Florida's 30 electoral votes are now practically a foregone conclusion. Does the Florida Hispanic vote really matter anymore, at least when it comes to presidential elections?
I think it does matter, certainly, and certainly people need to go out and vote.
Oh, sure.
The main issue is, for example, you know, some of the predictions that, you know, Miami-Dade will become, solid red and so on. Right now, you know, that may not be the case. Urban Florida may once again reassert its Democratic identity, right? We're seeing some issues that may in fact be moving part of the population that voted red in 2022 back to the Democratic fold. Mm-hmm. And also, let's remember, Tim, that we have had elections that have been low, very low voter turnout, especially among some Hispanics, not Cubans.
Uh-huh.
We're expecting a very high turnout in November.
Really?
And if a very high turnout among Hispanics, the high turnout will favor the Democratic
Party. Right, and that matters because the Florida Hispanic electorate does represent about a fifth of Florida's total electorate, correct?
Correct.
It does still very much matter when it comes to state and local elections here, even if it doesn't influence the electoral college in a presidential election the way it used to. And the Florida Democratic Party's performance lately with that bloc has not been pretty, especially when it comes to voter registration. What, to your mind, does that picture look like now for Hispanics and the Democratic Party in Florida? Is the Republican Party still outpacing Democrats? But you seem to mention earlier that you're expecting maybe the Hispanic performance with them or Democratic performance with Hispanics to be better this time.
Yes, I'm expecting that, and I'm expecting it on the basis really of if you, for example, look at the results on August the 20th, right? A Democratic mayor of Miami won with 60% of the vote.
Right.
Right. And trounced her Republican opponent.
Right. In a county where the majority of the electorate is Hispanic.
Exactly. And then I think you have the abortion issue and you have a few other things that, you know, the amendments, that may, you know, lead people, in fact, to split tickets. Right.
And that's where your point about Hispanic women sort of trending on the abortion issue the same way non-Hispanic women are could turn out to be very, very important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. Well, let's look at one interesting concrete example here, Eduardo. One Democratic candidate you might think would benefit from that Hispanic vote trend here is Debbie Mercosell Powell, who is challenging Republican Senator Rick Scott. Mercosell Powell is herself Hispanic, an Ecuadorian immigrant who makes a point in her TV ads about how she too escaped dictatorship to come to America. Are Hispanic Democrats like her connecting at all these days or more with these Florida Hispanics? And if so, which Hispanics?
Yeah. I think that Debbie Mercosell is connecting on the abortion issue fairly well, and that's been sort of a central point in her campaign. What I think is interesting is that her opponent has spent most of his time, Senator Scott, trying to portray her as a socialist.
Right.
And Tim, our research sort of tells us now that the socialism message has sort of it's no longer as important as it was.
Sort of running out of fuel then. I'm beginning to wonder that myself. No, that's a very interesting point. I wish we could go on, Eduardo, but our time's up, unfortunately. Eduardo Gamarra is a political science professor at Florida International University who heads FIU's Latino Public Opinion Forum. Eduardo, thanks as always.
Thank you, Tim. It's a pleasure.
Still to come, our panel will tackle toxic disinformation in Spanish language media and other Hispanic election issues. This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. Back in 2021, nonprofit watchdog organizations released a scathing report called Disinformation in Miami. It analyzed how right-wing Spanish language radio here had broadcast one lie, conspiracy theory, and falsehood after another about the 2020 election and the January 6th insurrection that had tried to shut down the certification of then-President-elect Joe Biden's legitimate victory over then-President Donald Trump. The question was, would it help make Spanish language media here more responsible? The answer, for the most part, critics say, is a resounding no. Disinformation in Espanol looks and sounds as rampant as ever in Miami and South Florida, especially against the backdrop of the current election cycle. And it threatens to leave us with Hispanic voters heading to the polls armed not with truthful policy facts, but toxic partisan fantasies. Sure, non-Hispanics get fed disinformation too, most recently about, quote, hurricane seeding. But Spanish language lies tend to get a pass because they fly under America's media radar for the most part. Joining me now is a panel of Hispanic journalists and experts on this issue of desinformación. Juan Camilo Gomez and Ricardo Brown, our news talk show host at Actualidad Radio, WURN, here in Miami. Evelyn Perez Verdía is a Fort Lauderdale communications consultant who heads We Are Más. And here with me in the studio is Ana Maria Carano, managing editor of the journalism nonprofit Factchequeado in Miami. What's your solution to Spanish language media disinformation here? Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Juan Camilo Gomez, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the invitation.
I want to start with you because your radio station, Actualidad, was one of the focuses of that 2021 report I mentioned. Now, I should mention that the morning show you host with your colleague Roberto Tejeda, Contacto Directo, and the morning show Ricardo Brown hosts with Roberto, Ricardo y Roberto, are not accused of disinformation. In fact, your shows make a point of warning listeners about disinformation. Actualidad's critics say the problem starts in the afternoon with shows like Cada Tarde, hosted by Agustin Acosta and Marianne de la Fuente. I myself have listened to disturbing falsehoods aired on that show. They've given credence to conspiracy theories that vaccines cause autism, for example, which critics say has hurt the Hispanic COVID vaccine effort here. What do you feel, Juan Camilo, is the worst sort of political disinformation that shows like Cada Tarde are broadcasting?
Well, I think that the problem mainly is because there is like a sense of I can say whatever I want because it's being protected by the First Amendment of the United States, of the Constitution. And that idea tends to showcase in a way of, okay, so I can get away with it because it's just the way I think. It's just my opinion. I can't speak directly about those shows or other stations' shows. I only speak for myself and for my show. And I can tell you that what we try to do in our show, it's try to be some sort of a shield against all the misinformation that we see like everywhere else.
Right.
And it's very hard because pretty much it feels sometimes like we are the only ones doing it.
Right. Well, Juan Camilo, when you hear, for example, disinformation on shows on other stations like La Poderosa, America Radio, et cetera, do you then take that disinformation into your show and try to tell your listeners what you may have heard on those shows is not correct, and this is why, et cetera?
Yes, and we actually don't have to do it ourselves because the listeners actually are doing the job. They are calling us and they say, hey, I listen in this particular show, in this particular station, this thing. Is that true? Is that not true? And we actually do the due diligence to actually find out what is behind it, where that disinformation is coming from, what is the source of it, and actually explain the whole thing. We actually had even full segments. We had one called El Mentirómetro, the Liometer. So people can actually, and we say, okay, this thing, this is totally false. Okay, this is not totally false, but this is just a little bit false because it was true at the beginning, but then it changed. So it's a whole thing.
Ricardo Brown, I want to play a recent clip here from a show called Hoy por Hoy on another Spanish language radio station here, America Radio, hosted by Karines Moncada, who used to be a host on your station, Actualidad, where she was regularly criticized for spreading disinformation. In this clip from a show last month, the day after a man was arrested for allegedly trying to assassinate former President Trump while he was playing golf, Moncada essentially plants the idea in her listeners' minds that the Secret Service itself might have actually conspired with that alleged assassin.
¿Cómo este señor sabía? Eso es una pregunta que me hago yo. Y después que el servicio secreto dispare 4 veces y no logre apuntar bien y neutralizar al sujeto.
So Moncada is suggesting there, Ricardo, that the Secret Service might have actually tipped off the assassin to where Trump would be playing golf that day, and that they might have actually have intentionally missed when they shot at the assassin. Is this typical of the sort of conspiracy theories that often get broadcast on Spanish language radio here, Ricardo?
I don't listen to Spanish language radio. Maybe I'm an ingrate. Maybe you know, I'm a rebel. You know, I'm very much interested in democracy. I'm very much interested in the rule of law. So I consume a lot of news. Not only am I a news host, you know, I consume a lot of news. So I tend to go to the legacy media, which is not perfect. So, you know, if I want to inform myself of conservative views, maybe I'll tap into National Review. I have a subscription since I was a teenager. I'll read the Washington Post, the editorials and commentaries on the Wall Street Journal. So, you know, I think we live in Miami in a different planet. It's really not totally part of the United States, except for the geography. It's not really Latin America. Sometimes I wonder if it's part of our world. Yeah. So no, I wouldn't make that kind of a comment. I'm almost an absolutist as far as freedom of speech and the First Amendment. I do think that not only do we have a problem with radio hosts, maybe they're not well informed, or maybe they want to spread misinformation. But I think there's a lot of consumption of that. I think a lot of the public, you know, appreciates that.
Yeah,
not, I myself, you know, I can speak for Juan Camilo. I can speak with Roberto. I am a listener of their shows.
Right.
You know, and I can tell you that I try to adhere by traditional ethics of journalism as defined by my experience in this country. I try to be fair.
Evelyn Perez Verdia, you monitor disinformation in Spanish language media here as closely as anyone. And as I mentioned, this is a big problem in English language media too. But why does it seem to be so much more pronounced here on the Spanish language airwaves in the Hispanic community? What are the roots of this phenomenon, which I know you've been looking into more deeply these days with Brown University, right?
Yes, Tim, thanks for the invitation. It's an honor to be with this great panel. Yes, we actually have been looking into this with Brown University since last year around this time, and presented a report in January. And I think one of the biggest pieces of this, Tim, is the fact that when we look a lot into the information needs of the Hispanic communities, a lot of it has to do also with different things like paywalls. Something that, you know, we're grateful WLRN doesn't have and is actually covering this issue. But there are a lot of people who have publications who have paywalls. And so our communities, what is free to them? What is free to them are radio stations when they're driving back and forth to work. What is free to them are YouTube channels, where we have found many of them that are, you know, spreading mis and disinformation based on accent, based on culture.
Right.
And I think that, you know, when we look at this, you know, there's so much to do. There's so much we try to do. But also, how many people really care about investing in this?
Right.
That's the big number one, the million dollar question.
I do want to get into that in a little later in the show here. Ana Maria Carano, I first want to mention that your organization, Factchequeado, received a special Cabot Award citation this week from Columbia University's Journalism School for the work it's done to confront disinformation in Spanish language media in the U.S. What are the biggest disinformation problems that Factchequeado finds itself having to deal with, especially in this election cycle, and especially for that matter this week with all the conspiracy theories and falsehoods coming out regarding Hurricane Milton?
Yeah, so The problem with Latino audiences and disinformation in the Latino audience is that attention to news is declining among U.S. Latinos. They follow the news less closely than African and white Americans, and many Latino get informed basically through social media. So with this landscape,
which as Evelyn pointed out, is free.
Yes, yeah. And with this landscape, they are very vulnerable to disinformation. So we are seeing every day many narratives that are trying to target not all the U.S. voters, not only that, specifically targeting Latinos. And we have seen that with paid advertising in the swing states targeting Latinos.
Right.
So it's a very, very concerning.
This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. Our panel here discussing Hispanic voters and Spanish language media disinformation are Juan Camilo Gomez and Ricardo Brown of Actualidad Radio, political communications consultant Evelyn Perez Verdía of We Are Más, and Ana Maria Carano of the nonprofit Fact Chequeado. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. And speaking of callers, we have Julio on the line from Miami, and he has apparently co-hosted radio programs in the past and has had to deal with some of this. Julio, welcome to the South Florida Roundup.
Hey, good morning. It's a pleasure to say hello to my good friends, Juan Camilo Gomez, Ricardo Brown, and Evelyn Perez Verdía.
Julio, could you tell us your last name just so we know which host we're talking about here?
Yeah, Julio Ligorría. I actually worked with Actualidad on El Mentirómetro.
Okay.
And it made me so happy to know that WLRN is putting this on full blast. I mean, one of the main things that we tried to do on that program was, fact check other hosts of other programs and go wide with it and also local. But one of the things that we did very early on was attempt at pre-bunking, which is something that's coming to the fore now that so many organizations are working very closely to combat disinformation.
Right.
And pre-bunking essentially is trying to give people the right information before they are targeted, before they're attacked with disinformation.
Interesting.
So, what we were doing was a lot of it had to do with the pandemic. And as
right.
many of your listeners know, there was a lot of pandemic-related disinformation, which really was very sad and cost a lot of people lives. So we tried the best we could to feed people the right information before
right.
they got targeted.
Well, thanks a lot, Julio. That's very interesting. I appreciate it. Juan Camilo Gomez, before we go to a break here, I just want to ask all four of you real quickly, if you could just give me, brief answers here. I want to ask you about the effects that all this disinformation has in the Hispanic community here and beyond. As a Hispanic journalist yourself, what worries you the most about what this does to Hispanics as voters and citizens?
That we cannot fix lies. We just can't keep fighting them, but they just keep popping up all the time, even the ones that we already said that they were lies. So I think the fact that this is a nonstop thing that increases when we are close to an election.
Ricardo Brown, let me put that same question to you. What sort of toxic effects does this have on what is largely an immigrant community that is trying to assimilate into the culture of American democracy? Does this compromise that assimilation?
I think it is difficult here in the South Florida area, where like around 70% of us were born in other countries and were educated in other countries. But at the same time, let me tell you something. Those stations are not doing that well. Their audience is down, their advertising is down, they're struggling. And we have to remember Americano Media, that they were going to be the Fox in Spanish.
Right.
They lasted about 3 months. They had absolutely no impact.
Didn't do too well.
So I think we're going to get a better idea
right.
once the votes are counted.
Right. Evelyn Perez Verdía, as a Latina communications consultant, what effects do you see having on political and civic discourse in the Hispanic community? I know, for example, that you worry that it often helps create the same sort of atmosphere of zero-sum political intolerance that so many South Florida Hispanics claim to have escaped back in Latin America in countries like your native Colombia.
Yes, it is. And I think that it's so important to remember that words matter. words matter. And I think the biggest piece is that we have to do a better job as civic society, as governmental entities, and as journalists to give accurate information and invest in giving accurate information to communities who depend also on their family and friends as the true influencers in their lives.
Right. Ana Maria Carano, why do organizations like FactCheckeado see the work you do as so urgent? If this problem isn't checked, what sort of effects do you see it having on the civic growth of the Hispanic community in this country?
Well, disinformation affects a lot of things, not only the intention to vote, to have a to let people to have informed decisions regarding vote. So we don't want people to vote with the manipulated information.
Right.
And but also, it also affects the access to benefits, because we have seen a lot of scams, a lot of fraud intentions. And we, so for instance, very recently with all the, with the two hurricanes that that impacted recently, Helene and also Milton, all the disinformation regarding FEMA, it's affecting actually the possibility of people accessing resources.
Very good point. Juan Camila Gomez, I want to pivot here to what you all might suggest are solutions to the Spanish language disinformation so many Hispanic voters here receive. And one question I wanted to put to you was, if this is perceived as largely a conservative or right-wing problem, why aren't more moderate or liberal forces themselves then buying Spanish language media? As Evelyn seemed to suggest, I think, in our last segment, we do have the recent example of a more liberal group buying Radio Mambí here in Miami, and we do have to give outlets like Actualidad Radio credit for giving more moderate hosts like you and Ricardo airtime. Is that having an effect on Hispanic listeners? Is it moving them toward more factual media, do you think?
I think it's too early to know with the one that with the other station, with Radio Mambí, because the purchase was too recent. And with the new talents that they just had, I mean, they're pretty great and they are really good friends of ours. But they just started. So we'll see. And I can tell you that right now we have a very successful show. Our show, when you see the ratings, we have one of the highest ratings, if not the highest ratings, depending on the audience that you check. If you check on the young audience, in the oldest out, maybe in the oldest, we don't, but the rest we do. We pretty much do have a big audience. And that's one of the points as well, because we are the only ones that are doing what we are doing. The rest of the stations and the rest of the shows are fighting for the same audience. Mm-hmm. We have the privilege to be doing something that talks to a lot of people. And we actually are not a left-wing. When you listen to the station, you listen to the callers, we have a lot of callers.
No, I was on your show a few months ago, as you remember, and I do remember it was not some left-wing show by any means, right?
That's right. And when you listen to the callers that we have very faithful listeners that are right wing, that are very conservative, but they want to challenge themselves and their positions. They just want some more responsible information.
Ricardo Brown, what do you feel is the solution to Spanish language media disinformation now?
I agree with Juan Camilo. You know that the morning shows, especially the shows hosted by Juan Camilo and Roberto, they have huge audiences, very diversified. And again, I stress that right-wing shows, not on our stations, they do well in the afternoon too. But, you know, they're lagging, they're struggling. And I don't think it's necessarily because of they're trying to carve up the same
Hi. I should mention that, Ricardo, I don't have the ratings information in front of me, so I can't corroborate what you're saying, but you seem to feel that the more right-wing shows are losing listeners.
Yeah, and I think part of the fact is that they some of them have abandoned traditional ethics as defined, in a democracy, such as ours. So I'm not as pessimistic as some others. Evelyn, there are a lot of intelligent people who can discern fact from fiction, truth from lies.
Okay, so showing better ratings on the part of a more moderate show is probably one of the best ways to get these stations and this media to turn in that direction, right? Evelyn Perez-Verdilla, I know that you feel that one of the big problems is the Democratic Party's own inability to counter the disinformation narrative the Republican Party has had so much success injecting into the Spanish language media scene here, especially when it comes to how easy it's been to label Democrats as comunistas and socialistas. Why have Trump and the right been so successful at this, and what do the Democrats have to do to reverse this inertia in Spanish language media?
Well, Tim, yeah, thanks for bringing that up. We see that if you look at the numbers from the Division of Elections in terms of Hispanic Democrats, 150,000 Hispanic Democrats have left the party since 2020. You see an increase in Hispanic no party affiliation, which I think goes to the point of all the panelists about the importance. So I think many people want to just have accurate information and maybe are turned off by both parties in terms of what they're giving them. But then you also see an increase of Hispanic Republicans registering to vote. So one of the things that I think is really important to remember is that words matter. A lot of the words that the Democrats have been using since forever, but since 2008, where you see more Republicans focusing on socialista, socialism, communism, not just in South Florida, but
around the country,
around the country, it just has a different meaning. In Latin America, progresistas connected to Chavez, to Castro, to all these names.
And a lot of liberals think when they're using the word progresista, they think it means progressive, when it means something a little more sinister in the ear of most Latin American migrants from places like Venezuela, et cetera. Yeah, that's
correct. So we actually did an opinion piece. I did an opinion piece recently in Caracas Chronicles in English and Spanish to the point about paywall. They have no paywall.
Right.
And we did it in English and Spanish so that the communities could read the article. So I think that we are all doing our part to try to make sure that our communities are getting accurate information.
Ana Maria Carano, what does an organization like Factchequeado consider the solution to this Spanish language media disinformation plague, as it were? Is there a way to change the culture to make voters in the Hispanic community more discerning media consumers?
So we do have a couple of strategies. One of them is we work a lot in media literacy that's using the pre-bunking technique. This is also called inoculation because it works like a vaccine. Mm-hmm. So we offer verified content about the false narrative before it happens. So we produce a lot of content about that. We also have verified content on our website, factchequeado.com, all the time. And when we fact check, we follow a methodology that guides step by step what we find, how we find information, so anyone can follow our steps and get their own conclusion. It's not that they have to believe us.
And you said there was a recent example of some disinformation that you guys really found tough to crack.
Well, we find that all the time. For example, regarding the communism narrative that is associated with Kamala Harris, we have found that Elon Musk, the PAC that is the super PAC that is backed by Elon Musk, which is America PAC, it's investing paid advertising to spread this disinformation. And usually,
and that shows up on Spanish language radio shows, for example, here.
Of course. Okay. And what we have done, I mean, we follow the money, we check what how much is investing in that, and usually these informers has a base on that. So the base on that kind of disinformation is that Kamala is trying to put as a federal law the price gouging.
That she's trying to control prices like a communist
regime. Trying to say, but actually she's trying to put as a federal law something that is already happening, is already approved in 37 states.
Right. Yeah.
So.
This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tim Padgett. I'm discussing Spanish language disinformation and other Hispanic voter issues with a panel including Juan Gamilo Gomez and Ricardo Brown of Actualidad Radio, communications consultant Evelyn Perez-Verdia of We Are Mas, and Ana Maria Carano of Fact Chequeado. Call us at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Juan Camilo Gomez, just very quickly again, I wanted to conclude our panel conversation here by asking you all what you feel are other key Hispanic voter issues that are going to show up in this election with this important swing block. As I mentioned at the outset of this show, Kamala Harris and Donald Trump are holding exclusively Hispanic town halls for a reason. What reason, what stands out for you in terms of the Hispanic vote for this election?
I think it's not as different as the rest of the population, but economy is still going to be a big issue. The border is going to be a big issue. Migration as a real solution as well. I think it might be like something really important. But just to be very quick, we saw yesterday on the town hall with Kamala Harris,
right,
fake news as well with the prompter that they were saying that she had a prompter, and they end up saying, no, it wasn't a prompter for her. It was a prompter in Spanish for the host.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Juan Camilo, where did you see this being broadcast that she had a prompter?
Oh, last night, several conservative media,
right,
said that she had a prompter.
Right.
Daniel Coronel, who is the director of the show, actually went on X on Twitter, and he said, this is not a prompter that she had. This is a prompter that we had for the anchor of the show.
Right.
And then after the Daniel Coronel corrected the record,
right,
Sean Hannity from Fox News went still on X and said, yes, she had a prompter. So
right.
This is for the point that we were saying before. Even
right.
if you fix it, okay, even there is no way to fix it.
Ricardo,
it's still going to be there.
Ricardo Brown, what do you think is going to turn out to be the issue that will drive the Hispanic vote in this election?
Maybe personality, you know, Trump or Kamala, but I wish there would be more discussion on Spanish language media on the real issues, the economy, healthcare, immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, there isn't. You know, you have people
right.
on the air saying that, you know, Michelle Obama is a
right.
man.
Evelyn Perez-Verdia, let me put this question to you in a little bit better way, a different way. Florida Latinos.
Okay.
Does the Cuban, Venezuelan, and Colombia vote, for example, here in the state, really have influence anymore on presidential elections?
I think the point, Tim, is that there are 21 Spanish-speaking countries of people who live in Florida who are Latino voters and Hispanic
yeah.
and Latino voters that can influence this election. And if you are not,
yeah.
if you are laughing off terms and messages that bring
yeah.
us pain, you're not going to get their vote. So you need to address what they're saying about you and the lies
right.
they're saying about you, and say, I am not a communist.
Okay.
I'm not a Marxist.
I'm sorry. We have to end it there. I'm sorry. We have to move on with the show. Thanks to all of you on this panel. We
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate it. Finally, on the roundup, romance and registration. The Washington-based voter registration nonprofit Voto Latino is partnering with a dating app called Chispa, which means spark, to get Gen Z Hispanics to the polls. WLRN's Jimena Romero tells us more.
Whether we speak more English or we speak more Spanish, we're all fluent in the language of love.
Chispa, a dating app made for Latinos, will help you find your way to your better half, and also to early voting sites. Collaborating with Voto Latino, the app has an interactive hub where users can review important deadlines, how to vote by mail, where to find polling locations, and maybe even a politically compatible partner. 80% of Chispa users are ages 18 to 34. Young Latino voters make up a third of the 36.2 million eligible Latino voters in the country. While all the information in the hub is nonpartisan, the app has a sticker collection that users can use to share their views on different issues. Since January, Voto Latino reports registering more than 150,000 voters. I'm Jimena Romero in Miami.
That will do it for the South Florida Roundup. If you missed any part of the show, you can always search for the South Florida Roundup podcast in the NPR app or wherever you listen to podcasts. The show is produced by Jimena Romero with help from Polly Landis. Katie Munoz is our director of original live programming. Mateo Sanchez is digital editor. Sergio Bustos is WLRN's vice president of news. The vice president of radio and the show's technical supervisor is Peter J. Mertz. Richard Ives answers the phones. I'm Tim Padgett. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening. Gracias, merci, obrigado.